know right from wrong, don't we? Well, let me pose you a test that I think will probably make you question your moral order. If it's okay to eat a grape at a supermarket, but not an apple, then what about a date? What's the dividing line between fair sampling of goods, readily available goods, and stealing items to which you have no right? What, in fact, is theft? And if you think it's okay to sample a grape, a date, a cherry, well, what about a nectarine or a smallish plum? Or is that going too far? Then why would it be wrong to download music online? Love to hear from you as to whether you'd sample the date or not. 1300 681 666 is the number. The SMS 0467 922 666. Sarah says via SMS, as per Terry Pratchett's Granny Weatherwax, there are no shades of grey, only white that's got grubby. Sarah says, of course it is wrong to sample the grapes unless they've been put out for sampling. With me now is the man who wields a finely sharpened ethical blade at the Economist lunch table, the Australia Institute's Dr. Richard Dennis. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Now, would you sample the date?
I do.
You do sample the date.
I do sample the
date. We have a date sampler in our midst.
Yes. And look, we did a survey and because we're interested in, you know, these issues, especially about intellectual property, and 35% of people think it's wrong to sample a grape, but 75% of people think it's wrong to sample an apple, which suggests there's 25% out there think sampling an apple is fine. Now, let me turn it around the other way. If some grapes have been sitting in the fridge at the supermarket for 3 weeks and they don't tell you this, are they stealing from you when they call themselves the fresh food people? When you buy some lamb that says packaged last Thursday that's been in a freezer for 4 years, are they stealing from you? Now, the point, I guess, I think theft, you know, theft is bad, but it's up to society to define sort of what fair is and certainly what theft is. So there are grey areas that we don't want to admit, I suspect.
Now, this is very interesting because it seems to be based on size and value.
Yes.
And that's what makes the date the departure point. And the apple, I think, I mean, my instinct is that it's completely wrong to take an apple from a supermarket, but I wouldn't hesitate about the grape. I don't eat dates, so I'm taking myself out of that equation.
You're wiser than I am.
So I guess this goes to how people form their notions of theft, doesn't it?
Yes. And these are cultural norms, and this is, I think, the important point. So with things like downloading music and downloading movies, we see that 97% of people think stealing a DVD from a DVD shop would be theft, but only about half of people think downloading a movie and not paying for it is theft. But what's interesting is the age differences, because young people are far less likely to think that's wrong than older people.
Well, so that would be my experience, that young people of my acquaintance generally see anything that they can get online as pretty fair game, which is something that's worried me occasionally when I've had those discussions. But it's a general assumption among younger people that it's out there and it's open slather and they don't care about the consequences.
Yeah, that's right. And it's, I think often they don't think about the consequences because they don't think what they're doing is wrong. So they don't think, will I do something wrong? I wonder what the consequences are. They don't have that second thought because they didn't have the first. They didn't agree with the premise. They didn't actually think they were doing anything wrong. And these things, I guess, it's interesting to notice that, look, they change over time. They change between generations. They sometimes change between genders, and they certainly change between countries. So if you think you've got this sort of unique capacity to spot right from wrong, then you better understand that there are billions of people on the planet that probably disagree with you.
Well, tell me how it varies between countries and cultures.
Oh, well, look, there's no doubt that, you know, the Americans are very upset that the Chinese don't care nearly as much about, you know, pirated things.
Just hang on a moment, Richard. We're just having your microphone dip out in between for a second or two. I might just get you to move to the microphone next to you, if you could. Sorry, we lost...
Someone's stealing
Someone is
my
stealing
airtime.
The airtime. Now, what were you saying to me about the Chinese?
Well, the Americans are very uptight. They think the Chinese don't nearly respect their intellectual property enough. Now, I'm not saying that all Chinese don't respect intellectual property, but the cultural norms in China seem to be quite different from the American cultural expectations. And look, in the next 20 years, there's going to be a big fight between America and China over things like this, because we hear about things like, you know, pirated shoes or pirated brand clothing. And what you have to understand is that an American brand might pay a Chinese factory to make 100,000 pairs of shoes, and that same factory makes an extra 200,000 pairs of shoes. They are exactly the same. They are the same materials from the same factory. It's just that 100,000 of them were sort of authorised by insert brand name here, and the other 200,000 came out of the same factory with the same workers, the same materials. The people who work in Chinese factories, not surprisingly, think, what are you talking about?
It's pirated. The same shoes.
Yes. Pirated. Why would I post a large cheque to an American company to pay a premium? You know, this shoe is identical. Yet, of course, the American copyright owner, the intellectual property owner, has got an entirely different view on that than the Chinese factory worker.
Why have we been so dedicated to the idea that we can make intellectual property a matter of black and white?
Oh, because it's very profitable if we can do this. And this is where I think things get interesting, and the crime commissioner in the news this week. But if I set up a shop, one of those $2 shops in a supermarket, in a shopping centre, and I have a giant front access with buckets full of things designed to attract people's eyes and pick them up, everyone knows there's going to be more shoplifting from that shop than from a jewellery shop that installs lots of security and beepers. So that shop has kind of made a decision. I'm going to make my things easy to pick up. I think that's going to increase my sales. And the consequence of that is people are going to knock off some of my stuff. They're not happy about that, but, you know, that's a choice they make. They could install more security, but they don't want to deter people from walking in. Once upon a time, there was no choice but to buy music on a CD or a record or a tape. It had to be physically produced. That meant it had to sit physically in a shop, and it was harder to steal in a physical shop. The record companies have saved a fortune by not having to make CDs anymore. They don't have to physically make the CDs. They don't have to transport them. They don't have to distribute them. They've put it online, which is far easier for us to pick up for free. And guess what? Some people are stealing their intellectual property. So, but is that a public policy problem? You know, we don't pay police to stand out the front of the $2 shop all day long, but increasingly the power of the state is coming in to protect the record company's intellectual property. Now, we can do that if we want, but we could also argue if they really don't want people to steal their music, make it a lot harder to get.
And look, I'd be very interested to hear your thoughts on this, whether you think that the theft of intellectual property really is theft, and perhaps there is an age difference going on here. 1300 681 666 is the number. The SMS 0467 922 666. Tell me your take on this. Dr. Richard Dennis from the Australia Institute is with me, and we've taken the notion of whether you would or wouldn't sample a grape and extrapolated that out to, well, miniseries and whole movies and albums. But the difficulty here, Richard, is surely too that where you've used the example of the $2 shop and that the goods are displayed very openly, that they are actual physical goods, whereas what technology means about music and the like is that probably the physical form of those things is going to become increasingly rare, that every transaction in that field will be a digital transaction.
Well, that's where I think the economics and the law really are going to collide. Now, let me just be clear to anyone listening. Theft is theft, and if a lawyer and a court says it's theft, then it is, and you shouldn't do it. What we're talking about is where, as a society, do we think we should collectively draw these lines? And I think they're a lot greyer than people think. But, you know, let's look at the economics for this for a minute. The reason that economists like markets is they solve a problem for us, allocating scarce resources. So if there's only so many cars or houses, we can't all have them. They're scarce. So we have to decide, well, who should get them? The thing with sharing information online is there's nothing scarce about it.
No, it can be replicated infinitely.
Infinitely at virtually zero cost. So the economic problem the problem why economics became a discipline was to say, well, given that we can't all have things, what's a fair and efficient way to produce as many of the things as we want, knowing that every time we make more cars, then we make less of something else? Well, there is no economic problem when it comes to copies of music anymore. There might be an economic problem getting musicians to record things, but there is no economic problem in distributing them. So if I copy it, it doesn't take away from anybody, except arguably, you know, the artist. But we look at who gets all the money out of this. It's not the artist. It's the record company. So, the economic problem is one of scarcity. There isn't scarcity when it comes to copying.
Rob says via the SMS, this is an interesting conversation, re-theft. The fruit question for me is that you can buy a single apple, but you don't buy a single grape. Therefore, this is a beautiful moral passing of the issue. You don't buy a single grape. Therefore, a single grape is not theft, but a bunch of grapes, yes, that would be.
Look, if that works for him, that's fine. This is the point. Like, how do we draw? There's a great episode of The Simpsons where Lisa Simpson insists that her mother pays for one grape, and all these people get angry queuing up behind while the checkout woman is sort of price check on one grape. There's all these angry people. Like, she's stealing more of their time.
Yeah.
Than the price of the grape. And this is, I think, the point, that as a society, we've historically been a bit pragmatic about the definition of theft. We've said, look, that's trivial and we don't care about it. But with the online space, we're trying to be very 0-1.
But surely the transaction at the supermarket checkout is a consensual transaction. Mm. So you might well be stealing time, you might well be acting in an irritating manner, but somebody has agreed to be part of that transaction, whichever way it goes. I mean, the interesting question too from this is what happens to people's online possessions after their death. Mm. We've got this situation set up with some of the major labels where you can only download your music to one computer or to a limited number of devices. And the question's been raised as to what happens if you pass those on. If you're no longer there, can you pass them on as your possessions?
Yes, that's right. And I think it's Bruce Willis
who's
leading this big case in the US to say, well, I've spent a fortune paying for downloaded music. I just as I would have given my CDs to whoever I love, I want to give this music. And strangely enough, he didn't read the 37-page terms that we all click I agree to.
Oh, Richard,
every
did he
time
not?
He didn't.
But we all.
Well,
we all
but
do,
this
don't
is the thing: is that theft? Are they stealing from us when they effectively trick us sometimes into agreeing to bizarre terms and conditions? Because, you know, when you rent a car, when you buy things online, you often make agreements, which a lawyer would say, why on earth did you do that? And they say, well, I don't know.
But the understood transaction there is, if we go back to the supermarket illustration, we understand that you can't buy a single grape. Although via Twitter, Limatron is questioning just that. She's saying, what's to stop someone buying a single grape? Oscar says, bite apple. If it's no good, put it back. If it's okay, buy it and several more. Discarded apple serves as a warning for others. And that Oscar's argument is that you are thereby doing a public service by sampling the goods. And I guess that by extension, the grocer or the supermarket may be stealing from you if they make you a promise that the food is good and worth the price that they're asking for it.
That's right. And you take it home and it's gone off in 2 days in the fridge because you'd bought it thinking it was fresh and actually it had been refrigerated. And look, this, I guess there's no doubt that the supermarket is a bit easier than the online space. The reason that I raise those examples is to sort of get people thinking about, well, where on a spectrum do they think certain things kick in? And I mean, one of the other things we've asked people is reading someone else's newspaper, is that stealing from journalists? You know, if I borrow a book from you, is that stealing from authors? Now, some people think, well, if I photocopy the book, that's stealing. But if I just read the book and have those memories in my head for the rest of my life, somehow that's different.
It's this physical object question,
yes,
isn't it? The physical object, and that's under such challenge in a world where there are increasingly less physical objects.
Less physical objects and more capacity for information to replace what was once a physical object. So once upon a time, a street directory in your car was a physical object. Now a street directory in your car is information. You used to buy a street directory and own it for the next 50 years. Now you need to keep paying them for a service to keep the street directory up to date? These aren't imponderable questions, but the point is we're on a slippery slope, replacing what was once the physical with the information, and it's the information where I think the economics and the law are more confused.
Michael says, originally patent and copyright were held by people and went to the public domain sooner for public good. Companies were formed for public good but now don't support the public good. And I guess this notion that you can keep control of your intellectual property forever is also... copyright expires.
Oh, well, arguably. The Mickey Mouse clause, I don't know if you've ever heard of this.
Yeah.
The Walt Disney Corporation own all the copyright for Walt Disney's creations, including Mickey Mouse. And every time it's about to run out of copyright, they get Congress to extend
the
copyright is. So it's now 70 years after the death of the author. But no doubt that'll be 100 and 150 years' time if they get their way. So let's think about the economics of this. The argument now is that unless 70 years after you die, your grandchildren are still receiving royalty checks, you won't have a creative urge. Now, this is ridiculous.
Yes.
I mean, what the internet shows us is most people are the opposite. They're desperate to have their creative content put up on for free because they want people to see it.
And one of the interesting things about the development of e-readers has been that they make it possible to access the great works of literature at a very low cost indeed.
You could buy
an entire library full of great books for a really quite nominal transaction price that recognises the service that's been done, I guess, in preparing them for being electronically available. And that surely is a service to us all as humanity, that you can read Madame Bovary, that you can read the Aeneid, that you can read all sorts of things which aren't owned as intellectual property by one person, but by us all.
Absolutely, and this is again where the economics gets interesting. The reason that you have a price for something is to help ration something scarce. It follows, it's first year economics. If it's not scarce, why ration it? The more people who can benefit from it, the better. And the problem is people have now confused economics with profit. Now, you can't make profit making something widely available for free, but you can help billions of people by making something widely available for free. So economic theory says if it's not scarce, why ration it? But marketing 101 says make it scarce and charge a high price.
Ruth says if music sourced online is cheaper to produce, then it should be cheaper to buy online. More people would be willing to buy digital music if the cost was substantially lower. E-books cost more than a real book in Australia at the moment. Well, that's an interesting question, Ruth, because not all e-books cost more in Australia, but some certainly do. Some cost a huge amount more in Australia for reasons that have got absolutely nothing to do with the electronic transaction that takes place.
No, everything to do with making profit, which, you know, and that's okay. We live in a system which encourages people to do that, but we've got to stop falling for this idea that because it's profitable, it's good for everybody.
And Michael's pointing out that 3D printing will also cause companies to get aggro and want more protection.
Oh, yes.
Oh, what a murky world. And the idea that you can legislate for ambiguity. Richard, terrific to talk to you, as always. And we're going to have another discussion on ethics and economics shortly. But thank you very much for your time. Great to have you with me here in the studio.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Dr. Richard Dennis from the Australia Institute. Time now for news headlines. And good morning to Mark Dawson.